Chapter 39, 8 and 20. Washington, January 8, 8 and 20. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 14th of December, 1819, requesting me to cause to be laid before it any information I may possess respecting certain executions which have been inflicted in the Army of the United States, since the year 1815 contrary to the laws and regulations provided for the government of the same, I transmit a report from the Secretary of War containing a detailed account in relation to the object of the said resolution. James Monroe, Washington, January 8, 8 and 20. To the Senate of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the Senate of the 20th of January, 1819, requesting me to cause a report to be laid before them at their next session of such facts as may be within the means of the government to obtain, showing how far it may be expedient or not to provide by law for clothing the army with articles manufactured in the United States, I transmit a report from the Secretary of War, which, with the accompanying documents, comprehends all the information required by the Senate in their resolution aforesaid. Point. James Monroe, Washington, January 19, 8 and 20. To the House of Representatives. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives requesting me to lay before it at as early a day as may be convenient an account of the expenditure of the several sums appropriated for building fortifications from the year 1816 to the year 1819, inclusive, indicating the places at which works of defense have been begun, the magnitude of the works contemplated at each place, their present condition, the amount already expended, and the estimated amount requisite for the completion of each. Also, the mode by which the fortifications are built, by contract or otherwise, I now transmit to the House a report from the Secretary of War, to whom the said resolution was referred, which, with the documents accompanying it, contains all the information required. James Monroe, Washington, February 8, 8 and 20. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In conformity with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 24th January, 1820, requesting me to inform the House what loans, if any, have been made since the peace, to private citizens, of powder, lead, and other munitions belonging to the government by officers of any department of the Army or Navy, specifying the times, terms, objects, and extent of such loans, the names of the persons by whom and to whom made, the different times of repayment, and also the amount of the ultimate loss, if any, likely to be incurred by the government in consequence thereof, I now transmit a report from the Secretary of War, which, with the accompanying documents, contains all the information that can be furnished on the subject. James Monroe, Washington, March 1, 8 and 20. To the House of Representatives of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 4th of February last, requesting to be informed what progress has been made in surveying certain parts of the coast of North Carolina and in ascertaining the latitude and longitude of the extreme points of Cape Hatteras, Cape Lookout, and Cape Fear, according to a resolution of the 19th of January, 1819, I have to state that it is intended to carry the resolution of the 19th of March into effect in the present year. The cooperation of the Board of Engineers with Naval Commissioners being necessary in executing that duty, and the Board having been engaged last year in surveying the eastern coast of our Union, it would have interfered with previous arrangements and been attended with increased expense had they been withdrawn from it. The Board will, however, be employed during the present summer in the regular execution of its duties in the survey of the coast of North Carolina, when instructions will be given it to afford the necessary aid to carry the resolution of the 19th of January of the last year into effect. James Monroe, Washington, March 4, 1820. To the Senate of the United States. I transmit to the Senate, in pursuance of their resolution of the 4th of January last, a report from the Secretary of State, with a list of fines incurred under the Act of Congress entitled An Act in Addition to the Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States, which appear from the records of the Department of State to have been remitted by the Executive Authority of the United States. James Monroe, Washington, March 8, 1820. The President pro tempore of the Senate. I transmit to the Senate copies of sundry papers having relation to the Treaty of 22nd February, 1819, between the United States and Spain, which have been received at the Department of State, and have not before been communicated to the Senate. James Monroe, Washington, March 8, 1820. To the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit to Congress a report from the Secretary of the Treasury, which, with the accompanying documents, will shew that the Act of the 20th of May, 1812, respecting the northern and western boundaries of the state of Ohio, has been executed. James Monroe, Washington, March 17, 1820. To the House of Representatives of the United States. It being stipulated by the fourth article of the Articles of Agreement and Session entered into on the 24th of April, 1802, with the state of Georgia that the United States should at their own expense extinguish for the use of that state, as soon as it might be done on reasonable terms, the Indian title to all the lands within its limits, and the legislature of Georgia being desirous to make a further acquisition of said lands at this time, presuming that it may be done on reasonable terms, and it being also represented that property of considerable value which had been taken by the Creek and Cherokee Indians from citizens of Georgia, the restoration of which had been provided for by different treaties, but which has never been made, it is proposed to hold a treaty with those nations, and more particularly with the Creeks, in the course of this summer. For the attainment of these objects I submit the subject to the consideration of Congress, that a sum adequate to the expenses attending such treaty may be appropriated should Congress deem it expedient. James Monroe, Washington, March 20, 1820. To the Senate of the United States. In compliance with the resolution of the Senate of the 16th of February, 1820, requesting me to cause to be laid before it abstracts of the bonds or other securities given under the laws of the United States by the collectors of the customs, receivers of public monies for lands, and registers of public lands, paymasters in the army, and pursers in the navy, who are now in office, or who have heretofore been in office, and whose accounts remain unsettled, together with a statement of such other facts, as may tend to shew the expediency or inexpediency of so far altering the laws respecting such officers that they may hereafter be appointed for limited periods subject to removal as heretofore, I transmit to the Senate a report from the Secretary of the Treasury, which, with the documents accompanying it, will afford all the information required. James Monroe, Washington, March 27, 1820. To the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States. I transmit to Congress an extract of a letter from the Minister Plenipotentiary of the United States at St. Petersburg, of the 1st of November last, in the subject of our relations with Spain, indicating the sentiments of the Emperor of Russia respecting the non-ratification by His Catholic Majesty of the treaty lately concluded between the United States and Spain, and the strong interest which His Imperial Majesty takes in promoting the ratification of that treaty. Of this friendly disposition the most satisfactory assurance has been since given directly to this government by the Minister of Russia residing here. I transmit also to Congress an extract of a letter from the Minister Plenipotentiary of the United States at Madrid of a later date than those heretofore communicated, by which it appears that, at the instance of the charge d'affaires of the Emperor of Russia, a new pledge had been given by the Spanish government that the minister who had been lately appointed to the United States should set out on his mission without delay, with full power to settle all differences in a manner satisfactory to the parties. I have further to state that the governments of France and Great Britain continue to manifest the sentiments heretofore communicated respecting the non-ratification of the treaty by Spain, and to interpose their good offices to promote its ratification. It is proper to add that the governments of France and Russia have expressed an earnest desire that the United States would take no steps for the present in the principle of reprisal which might possibly tend to disturb the peace between the United States and Spain. There is good cause to presume from the delicate manner in which this sentiment has been conveyed that it is founded in a belief as well as a desire that our just objects may be accomplished without the hazard of such an extremity. In full consideration of all these circumstances, I have thought it my duty to submit to Congress whether it will not be advisable to postpone a decision in the questions now depending with Spain until the next session. The distress of that nation at this juncture affords a motive for this forbearance which cannot fail to be duly appreciated. Under such circumstances the attention of the Spanish government may be diverted from its foreign concerns, and the arrival of a minister here be longer delayed. I am the more induced to suggest this course of proceeding from a knowledge that, while we shall thereby make a just return to the powers whose good offices have been acknowledged, and increase by a new and signal proof of moderation our claims on Spain, our attitude in regard to her will not be less favorable at the next session than it is at the present. James Monroe, Washington, May 9th, 1820. To the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States. I communicate to Congress a correspondence which has taken place between the Secretary of State and the Envoy Extraordinary and Minister Plenipotentiary of His Catholic Majesty, since the message of the 27th of March last, respecting the treaty which was concluded between the United States and Spain in the 22nd February, 1819. After the failure of His Catholic Majesty for so long a time to ratify the treaty, it was expected that this minister would have brought with him the ratification, or that he would have been authorized to give an order for the delivery of the territory ceded by it to the United States. It appears, however, that the treaty is still unratified and that the minister has no authority to surrender the territory. The object of his mission has been to make complaints and to demand explanations respecting an imputed system of hostility in the part of citizens of the United States against the subjects and dominions of Spain, and an unfriendly policy in their government, and to obtain new stipulations against these alleged injuries, as the condition in which the treaty should be ratified. Unexpected as such complaints and such a demand were under existing circumstances, it was thought proper, without compromising the government as to the course to be pursued, to meet them promptly and to give the explanations that were desired in every subject with the utmost candor. The result has proved what was sufficiently well known before, that the charge of a systematic hostility being adopted and pursued by citizens of the United States against the dominions and subjects of Spain is utterly destitute of foundation, and that their government in all its branches has maintained with the utmost rigor that neutrality in the civil war between Spain and the colonies which they were the first to declare. No force has been collected nor incursions made from within the United States against the dominions of Spain, nor have any naval equipments been permitted in favor of either party against the other. Their citizens have been warned of the obligations incident to the neutral condition of their country. Their public officers have been instructed to see that the laws were faithfully executed, and severe examples have been made of some who violated them. In regard to the stipulation proposed as the condition of the ratification of the treaty, that the United States shall abandon the right to recognize the revolutionary colonies in South America, or to form other relations with them when, in their judgment, it may be just and expedient so to do, it is manifestly so repugnant to the honor and even to the independence of the United States that it has been impossible to discuss it. In making this proposal, it is perceived that His Catholic Majesty has entirely misconceived the principles in which this government has acted in being a party to a negotiation so long protracted for claims so well founded and reasonable, as he likewise has the sacrifices which the United States have made, comparatively, with Spain in the treaty to which it is proposed to annex so extraordinary and improper a condition. Had the Minister of Spain offered an unqualified pledge that the treaty should be ratified by his sovereign on being made acquainted with the explanations which had been given by this government, there would have been a strong motive for accepting and submitting it to the Senate for their advice and consent, rather than to resort to other measures for redress, however justifiable and proper. But he gives no such pledge. On the contrary, he declares explicitly that the refusal of this government to relinquish the right of judging and acting for itself hereafter, according to circumstances, in regard to the Spanish colonies, a right common to all nations, has rendered it impossible for him under his instructions to make such engagement. He thinks that his sovereign will be induced by his communications to ratify the treaty, but still he leaves him free either to adopt that measure or to decline it. He admits that the other objections are essentially removed and will not in themselves prevent the ratification, provided the difficulty in the third point is surmounted. The result, therefore, is that the treaty is declared to have no obligation whatever, that its ratification is made to depend not on the considerations which led to its adoption and the conditions which it contains, but on a new article unconnected with it, respecting which a new negotiation must be opened, of indefinite duration and doubtful issue. Under this view of the subject, the course to be pursued would appear to be direct and obvious, if the affairs of Spain had remained in the state in which they were when this minister sailed. But it is known that an important change has since taken place in the government of that country, which cannot fail to be sensibly felt in its intercourse with other nations. The Minister of Spain has essentially declared his inability to act in consequence of that change. With him, however, under his present powers nothing could be done. The attitude of the United States must now be assumed in full consideration of what is due to their rights, their interest and honor, without regard to the powers or incidents of the late mission. We may at pleasure occupy the territory which was intended and provided by the late treaty as an indemnity for losses so long since sustained by our citizens, but still, nothing could be settled definitively without a treaty between the two nations. Is this the time to make the pressure? If the United States were governed by views of ambition and aggrandizement, Many strong reasons might be given in its favor, but they have no objects of that kind to accomplish, none which are not founded in justice and which can be injured by forbearance. Great hope is entertained that this change will promote the happiness of the Spanish nation. The good order, moderation, and the humanity which have characterized the movement are the best guarantees of its success. The United States would not be justified in their own estimation should they take any step to disturb its harmony. When the Spanish government is completely organized in the principles of this change, as it is expected it soon will be, there is just ground to presume that our differences with Spain will be speedily and satisfactorily settled. With these remarks I submit it to the wisdom of Congress, whether it will not still be advisable to postpone any decision in this subject until the next session. James Monroe, Washington, May 11, 1820. To the Senate of the United States. I transmit herewith to the Senate a report from the Secretary of State, together with the returns of causes depending in the courts of the United States, collected conformably to a resolution of the Senate of the 18th of January, 1819. James Monroe, Washington, May 12, 1820. The Speaker of the House of Representatives. I transmit to the House of Representatives a report from the Secretary of State, with the document prepared in pursuance of a resolution of the House of the 14th ultimo, in the subject of claims of citizens of the United States for Spanish spoliations upon their property and commerce. James Monroe. Proclamation. By the President of the United States of America. A proclamation. Whereas by an act of the Congress of the United States of the 3rd of March, 1815, so much of the several acts imposing duties on the ships and vessels and in goods, wares, and merchandise imported into the United States, has imposed a discriminating duty of tonnage between foreign vessels and vessels of the United States and between goods imported into the United States in foreign vessels and vessels of the United States were repealed so far, as the same respected the produce or manufacture of the nation to which such foreign ship or vessel might belong, such repeal to take effect in favor of any foreign nation, whenever the President of the United States should be satisfied that the discriminating or countervailing duties of such foreign nation so far, as they operate to the disadvantage of the United States have been abolished, and whereas satisfactory proof has been received by me from the Burgomasters and Senate of the free and hanseatic city of Lubeck that from and after the 30th day of October, 1819, all discriminating or countervailing duties of the said city so far, as they operated to the disadvantage of the United States have been and are abolished. Now, therefore, I, James Monroe, President of the United States of America, do hereby declare and proclaim that so much of the several acts imposing duties on the tonnage of ships and vessels and in goods, wares, and merchandise imported into the United States, has imposed a discriminating duty of tonnage between vessels of the free and hanseatic city of Lubeck and vessels of the United States and between goods imported into the United States in vessels of Lubeck and vessels of the United States are repealed so far as the same respect the produce or manufacture of the said free hanseatic city of Lubeck. Left square bracket seal right square bracket. Given under my hand, at the city of Washington, this 4th day of May, A.D. 1820, and 44th year of the independence of the United States. James Monroe. By the President, John Quincy Adams, Secretary of State. Fourth Annual Message. Washington, November 14, 1820. Fellow citizens of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, in communicating to you a just view of public affairs at the commencement of your present labors, I do it with great satisfaction, because, taking all circumstances into consideration which claim attention, I see much cause to rejoice in the felicity of our situation. In making this remark, I do not wish to be understood to imply that an unvaried prosperity is to be seen in every interest of this great community. In the progress of a nation inhabiting a territory of such vast extent and great variety of climate, every portion of which is engaged in foreign commerce and liable to be affected in some degree by the changes which occur in the condition and regulations of foreign countries, it would be strange if the produce of our soil and the industry and enterprise of our fellow citizens received at all times and in every quarter an uniform and equal encouragement. This would be more than we would have a right to expect under circumstances the most favorable. Pressures on certain interests, it is admitted, have been felt, but allowing to these their greatest extent, they detract but little from the force of the remarks already made. In forming a just estimate on our present situation, it is proper to look at the whole in the outline as well as in the detail. A free, virtuous, and enlightened people know well the great principles and causes in which their happiness depends, and even those who suffer most occasionally in their transitory concerns find great relief under their sufferings from the blessings which they otherwise enjoy and in the consoling and animating hope which they administer. From whence do these pressures come? Not from a government which is founded by, administered for, and supported by the people. We trace them to the peculiar character of the epoch in which we live, and to the extraordinary occurrences which have signalized it. The convulsions with which several of the powers of Europe have been shaken in the long and destructive wars in which all were engaged, with their sudden transition to a state of peace, presenting in the first instance unusual encouragement to our commerce and withdrawing it in the second even within its wonted limit, could not fail to be sensibly felt here. The station, too, which we had to support through this long conflict, compelled, as we were finally to become a party to it with the principal power, and to make great exertions, suffer heavy losses, and to contract considerable debts, disturbing the ordinary course of affairs by augmenting to a vast amount the circulating medium, and thereby elevating at one time the price of every article above a just standard and depressing it at another below it, had likewise its due effect. It is manifest that the pressures of which we complain have proceeded in a great measure from these causes. When, then, we take into view the prosperous and happy condition of our country in all the great circumstances which constitute the felicity of a nation, every individual in the full enjoyment of all his rights, the Union blessed with plenty and rapidly rising to greatness under a national government which operates with complete effect in every part without being felt in any, except by the ample protection which it affords, and under state governments which perform their equal share, according to a wise distribution of power between them, in promoting the public happiness, it is impossible to behold so gratifying, so glorious a spectacle without being penetrated with the most profound and grateful acknowledgments to the supreme offer of all good for such manifold and inestimable blessings. Deeply impressed with these sentiments, I cannot regard the pressures to which I have adverted otherwise than in the light of mild and instructive admonitions, warning us of dangers to be shunned in future, teaching us lessons of economy corresponding with the simplicity and purity of our institutions and best adapted to their support, evincing the connection and dependence which the various parts of our happy union have on each other, thereby augmenting daily our social incorporation and adding by its strong ties new strength and vigor to the political, opening a wider range, and with new encouragement, to the industry and enterprise of our fellow citizens at home and abroad, and more especially by the multiplied proofs which it has accumulated of the great perfection on our most excellent system of government, the powerful instrument in the hands of our all-merciful Creator in securing to us these blessings. Happy as our situation is, it does not exempt us from solicitude and care for the future. In the contrary, as the blessings which we enjoy are great, proportionably great should be our vigilance, zeal, and activity to preserve them. Foreign wars may again expose us to new wrongs, which would impose on us new duties for which we ought to be prepared. The state of Europe is unsettled, and how long peace may be preserved is altogether uncertain, in addition to which we have interests of our own to adjust which will require particular attention. A correct view of our relations with each power will enable you to form a just idea of existing difficulties, and of the measures of precaution best adapted to them. Respecting our relations with Spain, nothing explicit can now be communicated. In the adjournment of Congress in May last, the Minister Plenipotentiary of the United States at Madrid was instructed to inform the government of Spain that, if His Catholic Majesty should then ratify the treaty, this government would accept the ratification so far as to submit to the decision of the Senate the question, whether such ratification should be received in exchange for that of the United States heretofore given. By letters from the Minister of the United States to the Secretary of State, it appears that a communication in conformity with his instructions had been made to the government of Spain, and that the Cortes had the subject under consideration. The result of the deliberations of that body, which is daily expected, will be made known to Congress as soon as it is received. The friendly sentiment which was expressed on the part of the United States in the message of the 9th of May last is still entertained for Spain. Among the causes of regret, however, which are inseparable from the delay attending this transaction, it is proper to state that satisfactory information has been received that measures have been recently adopted by designing persons to convert certain parts of the province of East Florida into depots for the reception of foreign goods, from whence to smuggle them into the United States. By opening a port within the limits of Florida, immediately on our boundary, where there was no settlement, the object could not be misunderstood. An early accommodation of differences will, it is hoped, prevent all such fraudulent and pernicious practices, and place the relations of the two countries in a very amicable and permanent basis. The commercial relations between the United States and the British colonies in the West Indies and in this continent have undergone no change, the British government still preferring to leave that commerce under the restriction heretofore imposed in it in each side. It is satisfactory to recollect that the restraints resorted to by the United States were defensive only, intended to prevent a monopoly under British regulations in favor of Great Britain, as it likewise is to know that the experiment is advancing in a spirit of amity between the parties. The question depending between the United States and Great Britain respecting the construction of the first article of the Treaty of Ghent has been referred by both governments to the decision of the Emperor of Russia, who has accepted the umpirage. An attempt has been made with the government of France to regulate by treaty the commerce between the two countries in the principle of reciprocity and equality. By the last communication from the Minister Plenipotentiary of the United States at Paris, to whom full power had been given, we learn that the negotiation had been commenced there, but serious difficulties having occurred, the French government had resolved to transfer it to the United States, for which purpose the Minister Plenipotentiary of France had been ordered to repair to this city, and whose arrival might soon be expected. It is hoped that this important interest may be arranged in just conditions and in a manner equally satisfactory to both parties. It is submitted to Congress to decide, until such arrangement is made, how far it may be proper, in the principle of the act of the last session which augmented the tonnage duty on French vessels, to adopt other measures for carrying more completely into effect the policy of that act. The act referred to, which imposed new tonnage in French vessels, having been in force from and after the first day of July, it has happened that several vessels of that nation which had been dispatched from France, before its existence was known, have entered the ports of the United States, and been subject to its operation, without that previous notice which the general spirit of our laws gives to individuals in similar cases. The object of that law having been merely to countervail the inequalities which existed to the disadvantage of the United States in their commercial intercourse with France, it is submitted also to the consideration of Congress, whether, in the spirit of amity and conciliation which it is no less the inclination than the policy of the United States to preserve in their intercourse with other powers, it may not be proper to extend relief to the individuals interested in those cases by exempting from the operation of the law all those vessels which have entered our ports. Without having had the means of previously knowing the existence of the additional duty, the contest between Spain and the colonies, according to the most authentic information, is maintained by the latter with improved success. The unfortunate divisions which were known to exist some time since at Buenos Aires, it is understood, still prevail. In no part of South America has Spain made any impression in the colonies, while in many parts, and particularly in Venezuela and New Granada, the colonies have gained strength and acquired reputation, both for the management of the war in which they have been successful and for the order of the internal administration. The late change in the government of Spain, by the re-establishment of the Constitution of 1812, is an event which promises to be favorable to the revolution. Under the authority of the Cortes, the Congress of Angostura was invited to open a negotiation for the settlement of differences between the parties, to which it was replied that they would willingly open the negotiation, provided the acknowledgement of their independence was made its basis, but not otherwise. Of further proceedings between them we are uninformed. No facts are known to this government to warrant the belief that any of the powers of Europe will take part in the contest, whence it may be inferred, considering all circumstances which must have weighed in producing the result, that an adjustment will finally take place on the basis proposed by the colonies. To promote that result by friendly counsels with other powers, including Spain herself, has been the uniform policy of this government. In looking to the internal concerns of our country, you will, I am persuaded, derive much satisfaction from a view of the several objects to which, in the discharge of your official duties, your attention will be drawn. Among these none holds a more important place than the public revenue, from the direct operation of the power by which it is raised in the people, and by its influence in giving effect to every other power of the government. The revenue depends on the resources of the country, and the facility by which the amount required is raised is a strong proof of the extent of the resources and of the efficiency of the government. A few prominent facts will place this great interest in a just light before you. In the 30th of September, 1815, the funded and floating debt of the United States was estimated at $190,635,558. If to this sum be added the amount of 5% stock subscribed to the Bank of the United States, the amount of Mississippi stock and of the stock which was issued subsequently to that date, The balance is ascertained to be due to certain states for military services and to individuals for supplies furnished and services rendered during the late war. The public debt may be estimated as amounting at that date, and as afterwards liquidated, to $158,713,049. In the 30th of September, 1820, it amounted to $91,993,883, having been reduced in that interval by payments $66,879,165. During this term, the expenses of the government of the United States were likewise defrayed in every branch of the civil, military, and naval establishments. The public edifices in this city have been rebuilt with considerable additions, extensive fortifications have been commenced, and are in a train of execution, permanent arsenals and magazines have been erected in various parts of the Union, our navy has been considerably augmented, and the ordnance, munitions of war, and stores of the army and navy, which were much exhausted during the war, have been replenished. By the discharge of so large a proportion of the public debt and the execution of such extensive and important operations in so short a time, a just estimate may be formed of the great extent of our national resources. The demonstration is the more complete and gratifying when it is recollected that the direct tax and excise were repealed soon after the termination of the late war, and that the revenue applied to these purposes has been derived almost wholly from other sources. The receipts into the Treasury from every source to the 30th of September last have amounted to $16,794,107.66, whilst the public expenditures to the same period amounted to $16,871,534.72, leaving in the Treasury in that day a sum estimated at $1,950,000. For the probable receipts of the following year, I refer you to the statement which will be transmitted from the Treasury. The sum of $3,000,000 authorized to be raised by loan by an act of the last session of Congress has been obtained upon terms advantageous to the government, indicating not only an increased confidence in the faith of the nation, but the existence of a large amount of capital seeking that mode of investment at a rate of interest not exceeding 5% per annum. It is proper to add that there is now due to the Treasury for the sale of public lands $22,996,545. In bringing this subject to view, I consider it my duty to submit to Congress whether it may not be advisable to extend to the purchasers of these lands, in consideration of the unfavorable change which has occurred since the sales, a reasonable indulgence. It is known that the purchases were made when the price of every article had risen to its greatest height, and that the installments are becoming due at a period of great depression. It is presumed that some plan may be devised by the wisdom of Congress, compatible with the public interest, which would afford great relief to these purchasers. Considerable progress has been made during the present season in examining the coast and its various bays and other inlets, in the collection of materials, and in the construction of fortifications for the defense of the Union at several of the positions at which it has been decided to erect such works. At Mobile Point and Dauphin Island, and at the Rigolets, leading to Lake Pontchartrain, materials to a considerable amount have been collected, and all the necessary preparations made for the commencement of the works. At Old Point Comfort, at the mouth of James River, and at the Riprap, in the opposite shore in the Chesapeake Bay, materials to a vast amount have been collected, and at the Old Point some progress has been made in the construction of the fortification, which is on a very extensive scale. The work at Fort Washington, in this river, will be completed early in the next spring, and that in the Peepatch, in the Delaware, in the course of the next season. Fort Diamond, at the Narrows, in the harbor of New York, will be finished this year. The works at Boston, New York, Baltimore, Norfolk, Charleston, and Niagara have been in part repaired, and the coast of North Carolina, extending south to Cape Fear, has been examined, as have likewise other parts of the coast eastward of Boston. Great exertions have been made to push forward these works with the utmost dispatch possible, but when their extent is considered, with the important purposes for which they are intended, the defense of the whole coast, and, in consequence, of the whole interior, and that they are to last for ages, it will be manifest that a well-digested plan, founded in military principles, connecting the whole together, combining security with economy, could not be prepared without repeated examinations of the most exposed and difficult parts, and that it would also take considerable time to collect the materials at the several points where they would be required. From all the light that has been shed in this subject, I am satisfied that every favorable anticipation which has been formed of this great undertaking will be verified, and that when completed it will afford very great, if not complete, protection to our Atlantic frontier in the event of another war, a protection sufficient to counterbalance in a single campaign with an enemy powerful at sea the expense of all these works, without taking into the estimate the saving of the lives of so many of our citizens, the protection of our towns and other property, or the tendency of such works to prevent war. Our military positions have been maintained at Belle Point, in the Arkansas, at Council Bluffs, in the Missouri, at St. Peter's, in the Mississippi, and at Green Bay, in the Upper Lakes. Commodious barracks have already been erected at most of these posts, with such works as were necessary for their defense. Progress has also been made in opening communications between them and in raising supplies at each for the support of the troops by their own labor, particularly those most remote. With the Indians, peace has been preserved and a progress made in carrying into effect the act of Congress making an appropriation for their civilization, with the prospect of favorable results. As connected equally with both these objects, our trade with those tribes is thought to merit the attention of Congress. In their original state, game is their sustenance and war their occupation, and if they find no employment from civilized powers, they destroy each other. Left to themselves, their extirpation is inevitable. By a judicious regulation of our trade with them, we supply their wants, administer to their comforts, and gradually, as the game retires, draw them to us. By maintaining posts far in the interior, we acquire a more thorough and direct control over them, without which it is confidently believed that a complete change in their manners can never be accomplished. By such posts, aided by a proper regulation of our trade with them and a judicious civil administration over them, to be provided for by law, we shall, it is presumed, be enabled not only to protect our own settlements from their savage incursions and preserve peace among the several tribes, but accomplish also the great purpose of their civilization. Considerable progress has also been made in the construction of ships of war, some of which have been launched in the course of the present year. Our peace with the powers in the coast of Barbary has been preserved, but we owe it altogether to the presence of our squadron in the Mediterranean. It has been found equally necessary to employ some of our vessels for the protection of our commerce in the Indian Sea, the Pacific, and along the Atlantic coast. The interests which we have depending in those quarters, which have been much improved of late, are of great extent and of high importance to the nation as well as to the parties concerned, and would undoubtedly suffer, if such protection was not extended to them. In execution of the law of the last session for the suppression of the slave trade, some of our public ships have also been employed in the coast of Africa, where several captures have already been made of vessels engaged in that disgraceful traffic. James Monroe. Special Messages. December 12, 1820. To the Senate of the United States. In compliance with a resolution of the Senate of the 6th of December, requesting that the agent employed under the act entitled An Act Authorizing the Purchase of Fire Engines and Building Houses for the Safekeeping of the Same should report in the manner stated in the said resolution his conduct in execution of the said act, I now transmit to the Senate a report from the agent, which communicates all the information which has been desired. James Monroe. December 14, 1820. To the Senate of the United States. I submit to the consideration of the Senate, for their advice and consent as to the ratification, the following treaties, concluded with the several Indian tribes therein mentioned, since the last session of Congress, with their documents, viz., with the Wais, Kickapoos, Chippeways, Ottawas, Choctaws, and Manus, and also a treaty with the Kickapoos amended, as proposed by a resolution of the Senate at their last session. James Monroe. Washington, December 14, 1820. To the House of Representatives. In compliance with the resolution of the House of Representatives of the 21st of November last, requesting the President to lay before the House information relating to the progress and expenditures of the commissioners under the 5th, 6th, and 7th articles of the Treaty of Ghent, I now transmit a report from the Secretary of State, with documents containing all the information in the possession of that department requested by the resolution. James Monroe.